The yeas are 220. The nays are 215. The bill is passed.
I want to say a few words about the landmark vote that the House of Representatives is poised to take today, a vote that can bring us one step closer to making real the promise of quality, affordable health care for the American people. For the better part of a year now, members of the House and the Senate have been working diligently and constructively to craft legislation that will benefit millions of American families and millions of American businesses who urgently need it. For the first time ever, they've passed bills through every single committee responsible for reform. They brought us closer than we have ever been to passing health insurance reform on behalf of the American people. Now's the time to finish the job. The bill that the House has produced will provide stability and security for Americans who have insurance, quality, affordable options for those who don't, and lower costs for American families and American businesses. And as I've insisted from the beginning, it is a bill that is fully paid for and will actually reduce our long-term federal deficit. I just came from the Hill where I talked to the members of Congress there, and I reminded them that opportunities like this come around maybe once in a generation. Most public servants pass through their entire careers without the chance to make as important a difference in the lives of their constituents and the life of this country. This is their moment. This is our moment to live up to the trust that the American people have placed in us, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. This is our moment to deliver.
And for one interesting take on healthcare reform in the United States, here is U.S. citizen and documentary filmmaker Michael Moore at an information briefing on healthcare reform at the California State Legislature.
We have listened to this for the last 30 plus years about how the federal government is bad, state government, big government, bad, you know? And it's like, how did we ever cop the attitude that the government of, by, and for the people could be bad? Because the government's us, and we're not bad. I don't understand this. I don't understand, but they've done a good job, haven't they, convincing the average American, you don't want to get the government involved. When somebody says that to me, you know what I say to them? I said, you know, really, you don't want the government involved? Ask your grandparents if that Social Security check comes every month. And it not only comes every month, my dad says it comes on the same day through the government-sponsored U.S. mail. And remarkably, it's the same amount every month. They actually get the check right. How do they do that? Tens of millions of seniors every month get a Social Security check on time for the exact amount. The American people have fallen for this myth that government is bad. It's only as bad. I heard Al Franken say a couple months ago, he said, you know, the Republicans, they run on a platform of the government is bad, it's evil, you don't let the government run things. And then once elected, they spend the next 4 years proving themselves right. You know?
Raul, you've been filming in Bolivia and Honduras. Tell us what you've been seeing on the ground.
Well, I just recently returned from Honduras with a delegation from the Latin American Solidarity Network, where we spent close to 10 days working and filming with the Frente de la Resistencia contra el Golpe, which is the group just made up of social movements which are struggling against the coup d'etat for the return of the President Manuel Zelaya in Honduras. So first, in terms of the North American media, the way the North American media has spun the struggle is that really It's a struggle between the executive branch and the judicial branch. So Manuel Zelaya was trying to reform the Constitution so he can stay in power for his whole life type thing, which is absolutely incorrect. When we were in Honduras and we met with all the social movements, which are comprised of, you know, the unions, the campesinos, the indigenous people, the Afro, the Garifuna people, students, middle-class folks, teachers are at the forefront of the struggle. They all made something very clear to us, which is obviously they want the return of the President Manuel Zelaya, who was democratically elected. But more importantly, this is one of the interviews we had with Berta Cáceres, who is the leader of one of the indigenous movement, Copin, she said the goal has been historical for us, which is a struggle to refound the nation, Honduras being, to bring forth a constitutional assembly which is democratic, which is popular and open to all, so they can refound the nation to a more just society where, you know, the wealth and the political power is redistributed to the majority, not just to a select elite few.
Oh, I don't believe in the HST.
Why not?
Because we already pay enough. I just think it's being mismanaged. I think all the funds and all the taxes that we pay are not being effectively managed.
To get the story straight, we wanted to hear from both sides of the harmonized sales tax issue. In these clips, we start with the government. The Minister of Revenue, John Wilkinson, gives us what he calls HST 101.
Well, we're proposing a comprehensive tax package for taxpayers and businesses because our goal is to help Ontario become even more competitive so we can produce more, export more, and most importantly, create more jobs. Times have changed. We're witnessing the biggest global economic downturn in some 80 years. If we want Ontario to stay strong, we must change too. Experts agree merging the provincial sales tax and the GST to create one sales tax is the single most important thing that we can do to give Ontario a competitive advantage. Together with our tax cuts, it would attract investment and jobs. It would also help protect those things, like our schools and hospitals, that make Ontario a better place to live.
NDP MPP for Toronto Danforth, Peter Tabbins.
You know, harmony is a really wonderful word, but what's happening here is a big tax shift, and what it's going to mean is that all kinds of things that used to be exempted from the provincial sales tax in the past are now going to be covered by provincial sales tax. So if you're working at minimum wage, if you're working part-time trying to get through school, if you're a senior, you're going to find your everyday expenses are going to go up. There are tax reductions, income tax reductions, but frankly, a lot of people are on minimum wage or on a pension now, don't pay much in income tax, but they're going to be stuck with this particular tax. It's going to drive up people's cost of living, and I think just make life in the city a lot harder.
Rod Shepherd represents more than 7,500 professional employees, engineers, scientists, middle management, and information technology personnel in Ontario's electricity sector.
You say that selling off Hydro One or Ontario Power Generation would be a bad idea. Why is that?
Yes, Robin, and I believe that I share this opinion with several hundred people here in the province. The selling off of these assets would limit our, first of all, our economic recovery that we so badly need in the manufacturing sector. The price of electricity has always been one of those issues that is discussed. But as we go forward with the Green Energy Act and issues tied to it, it will be very difficult, in my opinion, to see how that can be well regulated and well managed if these assets that currently are in the public hands are surrendered to the private sector. I will go on to say we do represent people in the private sector, and we're quite pleased with the response that we've had with those people, but more privatization is not a good thing when it comes to the electricity utility sector here in Ontario.
And your organization also says the stability in the electricity sector will be had through public investment, and that it's crucial for all Ontarians. How is that?
Well, you have a situation with both Ontario Power Generation and Hydro One, where the government can dictate what gets done, what the priorities are, and if this is given to the private sector, that certainly is not left in the hands of the government any longer. They will have to then go to private sector operators and ask for the opportunities to do those things. So the stability of the utility network is going to be at risk by private operators wanting to operate and not wanting to be shut down, just as we currently shut down OPG on and off when the system needs to be regulated.
And I guess that leads to the next question with about privatization that I think a lot of Ontarians will have at the top of their minds is about selling Hydro One and Ontario Power Generation. What effect will it have on rates for customers?
Well, the past tells me that, first of all, the people of this province will not get a fair price for the assets that are sold. That's the first thing. And second of all, these people aren't doing it to ensure that we have safe, reliable power in the province of Ontario. They're doing it to make a profit and to ensure that their interests and their shareholders are looked after as far as their investment. So it's hard to conceive that the prices would remain the same or go down.
And just to give the Ontario government the benefit of the doubt, would they be proposing the selling of Ontario utilities like Hydro One and Ontario Power Generation because these companies are losing money?
No. These companies make money. In fact, their profits after costs have increased, but only because their generation capabilities and transmission capabilities have increased. No, this is you know, short-minded thinking to deal with a deficit in 2009. To quote here, both companies make yearly payments in lieu to the Ontario Electricity Financial Corporation, which are roughly equivalent to what they would pay in combined federal and provincial corporate income taxes if they were private companies. And if they were sold, the province would no longer be paid the federal portion. And in 2007 and 2008, that amount for Hydro One was about $118 million and $65 million in 2008. And for OPG, it was around $105 million. So not only would the profits that are made by these corporations that go back into general revenue be lost, you'd actually lose the tax portion of that as well. So there's a double whammy involved in that. So we're concerned about the price of electricity going up. You don't have to look very far in this province to see manufacturing plants closed because, in part, there are concerns about the cost of electricity. And certainly that was the resounding comments coming out of Northern Ontario in the pulp and paper industry, that the costs of electricity were impeding their success.
This proposal to privatize Hydro and Ontario Power Generation is not a new one. The Mike Harris government threatened to privatize Hydro as well. Do you think McGuinty will succeed this time around in privatizing Hydro, and what will prevent him from doing so?
Well, we sure hope that this is some scheme that is ill-fated. What is different this time is that there's more at risk than there was. The public is more aware now of the costs. Public is more aware that you start to fragment this more, and it's hard to control the electricity system. I mean, we're a strong believer that the first breakup of Ontario Hydro was wrong because we're now paying extra for extra services. We have increased government influence in this. Organization with the OPA and the IESO and other entities such as that weren't part of the Ontario Hydro situation. And Ontario Hydro was a vertically integrated corporation where they were in control of all aspects and thus being able to maintain control of the electricity sector. Wasn't perfect, but we've only seen an increase in rates since the fragment some decade ago now.
So while Mike Harris wasn't successful in privatizing the entire industry, he did succeed in privatizing aspects of it.
He managed to, and I think that the citizens of this province made the appropriate amount of noise to say, listen, some of these corporations that you're looking at aren't losing money. They are good, solid corporations, good corporate citizens. And they need to be kept in the hands of the public so that we can control the costs for the infrastructure of the province of Ontario. This is key and fundamental to the success of supporting the Green Energy Act, the recuperation of the manufacturing sector, and certainly not lost on anyone is the effect that the Aboriginal influence could have on a public sector electricity system is very important and significant to make sure their voices are heard going forward in the future.
And those the concerns of First Nations and also the manufacturing sector, green jobs, how are all these, the interests of these groups, how are they affected by the privatization of hydro?
Well, if we take the Aboriginal community and the governments there, their relationship is with the government of the province of Ontario and certainly the Canadian government, and they have the ability to secure contracts with them. I wouldn't know what they would be able to do in a private partnership with a private owner. But there's more assurances going forward for them in a public arena to be a player in the recovery of the electricity sector and the refurbishment of it and so on.
And the effects of a privatization on workers at Ontario Power Generation and Hydro, what could the privatization mean to workers?
Well, my concern certainly with privatization is always about doing the minimal to maintain that we're operating. I'm concerned about that. These people that run up Ontario Power Generation and Hydro One carefully plan, make sure the refurbishments are being done and the maintenance is being done. And that is for the benefit of the people of Ontario, not for the investor that is putting the money around always. It's got a balance there that I don't think would be there if the private sector was able to own it. It would be bottom line driven, and the bottom line would be, is that making us money or not making us money?
And lastly, the effects of privatization on carbon emissions in hydro and in Ontario Power Generation. How would that affect carbon emissions in the province?
Well, certainly with the plan for coal closures, there will be more reliance on gas if there's not a better plan. The concern that we would have is that we become as reliant on gas as we are on coal. And if you're going to put more demand on the system, and we fully support the Green Car Initiative, if you're going to put more demand on it, something is going to have to take place of lack of private sector availability or loss of other renewables that aren't available at the time we've time shifted this power demand to. We'd certainly be concerned that we are, you know, what we're replacing, what we're losing in the system would not reduce the carbon footprint as significantly as one would think. And people are going to want to put replacement energy up as cheaply as they can, as quickly as they can. And gas will do that. While it's the lesser of two evils with coal, it's still not going to address completely the issues that are under the Green Energy Act, in my opinion.